Good morning, Tucson. Happy Friday to you, and welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios with me, your host, Zach Yenser. This is Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, talk, and conversation about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. A busy end of the week here. We packed this show out. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about the impact of COVID on college towns. Expect Wall Street Journal columnist Justin Baer to be calling in just a few moments. We'll let you know if anything changes there. Devin Underwood from the Talent Store will be talking workforce pivots. The governor announced yesterday that schools will be open in the fall, or allowed to open in the fall. And it brings to mind, when we talk about pivoting workforce and employees and employers, that one of the big things we have to work through and walk through is when our parents go back to work, what happens to the children, and how does that impact parents going back to work? So we're going to talk about that with Devin Underwood. And then I'm excited to break some startup news in Tucson as we close out the week. Janelle Briggs and Ryan Egan will share an update about their revolutionary housing startup Stackhouse. I'm greatly looking forward to that. I left the first segment open, so to speak, in terms of not being having a guest right away, because I try to use a few moments on Friday just to kind of make sense of the week that was, make sense of the weekend ahead, just have a chance to chat with you, Tucson, a little bit before we get into things. And I woke up this morning. I guess I'll back up. I think in the radio business, being on this side of the mic, the pressure is there to wake up and to assess the news and assess what's happening and have a hot take. And I'm not diminishing anything. And I think hot take is probably not doing any of us any justice, because I think we all come into things wanting to have the facts, the data, have a good answer on things, think about things well, offer what's on our mind in a very substantive way. But the pressure is there to wake up, see what's going on, prepare the night before, come in, have something, you know, really solid, have answers, have a hot take. And I think journalism has shifted that direction anyway, which is something I talk about on the show, and where we've gone from talking about what's happening to opining on what's happening. So that pressure is there. And so when I woke up this morning to what has happened this week and processing, I woke up to Minneapolis burning this morning, woke up to mass demonstrations in the city of Minneapolis. I woke up after a week where Twitter began to censor the president. And I hope I'm not saying that in a way that reveals any kind of bias, because if you think there is a bias, there isn't. We are in a season where we have stepped into where social media is now fact-checking people on Facebook and saying, you need to check your facts as you click on this and look at the tweet. Completely new ground. We're looking at a president who says, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. We're looking at two or three weeks where we've seen a nation really wrapped up again in urban violence, in racial conversations. And this comes after 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks of a nation processing COVID-19 and what it means, and the exhaustion. If you feel it, you know I feel it. Behind the mic on this side is living in a reality of half-truths and having to put all of those truths together. And so when I woke up this morning, I felt the pressure of having to make sense of all of this, of having to have all the answers, of having to have an answer, and I don't. I don't know the details. I don't know all the details. I don't know what we'll find out about everything we've just talked about in the next few days. I don't want to contribute to the armchair quarterbacking of everybody on social media feeling like they have the right answer at the right time. I have the humility, I think, to know that that's not always possible in real time. But I walked into the studio today just feeling like we are a nation that's hurting. We are a community that's hurting locally, nationally, at the state level. Just, you know, not stopping here, but just starting here with, I think, thoughts and prayers for our nation right now, for our community. And, you know, I wonder, and I'm not trying to dramatize anything, but, you know, I'm starting to get the feeling, and this is a historical feeling, right? I was not born at this time. All of you know that. Some of you were. But, you know, the long, hot summer of 1967, right? The 159 race riots that erupted across the United States in 1967. President Lyndon Johnson puts in the Kerner Commission to investigate the rioting and urban issues of Black Americans. I'm not going to say that what we see in Minneapolis is the start of 158 others, right? I'm not trying to dramatize this. Now, but you do get the feeling that as a country, we're entering a long, hot summer. There were 40 million people unemployed, communities that don't understand what the future looks like, leadership that at every level that is just trying to save the day, 3 weeks of racial situations in the news. This could be a long, hot, hot summer ahead. And I posted something on my Facebook, and I'm sensitive to, you know, to spiritualizing anything, because that's not all my listeners. But the only thing that I've come to personally this week are the words of Saint Francis of Assisi: "Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there's hatred, let me sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's doubt, faith. Where there's despair, hope. Where there's darkness, light. Where there's sadness, joy." And I think in the midst of all this, when none of us have all the answers to everything, we may think that we do, I think we can acknowledge that our brothers and sisters locally, around the country, that the American people, that the people here, are just hurting. There's hurt, there's frustration, there's anger, there's division, there's a lack of unity. And my headspace, rather than trying to have all the answers going into the weekend, is just figuring out how do we have a national climate of peace and unity and solving these problems together. And sometimes the best that we can do is just put out there that we know that there's pain, and we need to come together as a community. If you expected me to have a hot take, to have all the answers, to say whether XYZ was right or ABC was wrong, I don't have it today. But sometimes we just have to, I think, realize the moment that we're in, and what we need to do moving forward. Let's go to our first break. Justin Bear is on the line, Wall Street Journal writer, to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on college towns and what does that mean for Tucson. We're just getting started. 790-2040. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info.
How would you like a hand in shaping the future of transportation in Tucson? Well, the city's developing a plan called Move Tucson to identify and prioritize transportation projects over the next 20 years, and we want to hear from you. Head to movetucson.org to share your vision for how to improve Tucson transportation, no matter how you get around. How do you want Tucson to grow? Go to movetucson.org and let us know. Again, that's movetucson.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Here at 1030 The Voice, we care about Tucson. Here are some things we can do together to keep our community safe. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Avoid touching our faces outside of the home. When in public, please maintain a safe distance of 6 feet. Stay home if you're sick. Cover your mouth when you cough and avoid unnecessary trips into the public. We're in this together. Help us keep Tucson safe. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back. And on the line with us now is Justin Berry. He's the senior special writer for the Wall Street Journal. Wrote an article recently called Graduations, Campus Classes Canceled by Coronavirus, Shock College Town Economy. He writes, large colleges and universities employ thousands, buy local goods and services, and draw tens of thousands of students and visitors to their stores, restaurants, and hotels. Their presence has shielded local communities from both long-term economic shifts and short-lived recessions. In places like Blacksburg, business cycles turn predictably with the seasons. Justin Bear, welcome on the air. How are you, sir? Thanks for calling in.
No sweat. Thanks for having me.
Yes, for sure. So I want to cut to the chase here, because one of the big news in Tucson, Justin, has been a Moody Analytics article that lists Tucson as a top 10 city with the possibility of coming through the COVID-19 in a very strong way. One of the things that Moody says is that's due to being a college kind of driven community. I wanted to get your take, because you're researching college towns around the country that are really shuddering here from COVID-19. What are you seeing around the country?
Sure. So I think for college towns, particularly those that are in smaller communities where they don't have the same maybe economic diversity and are really dependent on those schools, they have, as you can imagine, had a pretty difficult spring. And are seeing that continuing as we get through summer. They're as you can imagine, there are a couple different layers of economic activity that these colleges produce. The first being kind of the thousands of people that the colleges employ directly. The fact that they buy lots of local goods and services. But then importantly, they're also the students themselves, and the biggest challenge that lots of local businesses have had with this issue is that those students just haven't been in town. So if you take a look, I focused on Blacksburg, Virginia, in the middle of March, as the school was heading into spring break, they lost a big chunk of their population at that point, and haven't really gotten them back. And so it's been a struggle for businesses that, not only have relied on the presence of students to buy all sorts of goods and services, but also some of the big events that really are so critical to businesses, whether it's most recently graduation weekend or during the summer orientation periods, or you know, looking into the fall, for some towns, the notion that you would not have those six or seven home football games can be pretty troubling to think about, just given right. how those events fill hotel rooms, right. and restaurants, and bars to capacity. And so, right now, you know, I think they are kind of looking nervously to the fall and what that's mm-hmm. what that's going to be like, and how much how quickly things sort of snap back to the way they were before. All the while, just trying to sort of hold it together, keep it together during what's already in a relatively slow period for these communities, right? You know,
right.
in summer, it's a fraction of right. the student body there to begin with, and so those days have arrived now, and they're just hopeful, but again, nervous about what fall will bring.
We're talking to senior special writer for the Wall Street Journal, Justin Baer. You looked at in this article Ithaca, New York, which is Cornell; Blacksburg, Virginia Tech; Corvallis is Oregon State; Moscow, Idaho is the University of Idaho. And the first three I mentioned, we're talking about $1 to $2 billion of economic impact between university operations, visitor spending, and student spending. You know, Justin, I'm curious, are there communities where this impact on higher education has a greater impact? In other words, if you look at an Ithaca, New York, is that different from a city like Tucson that has, you know, 500,000 in the city proper, 1 million in the metro area? Is there a difference in these college-driven communities that you're seeing?
Yes, in that, smaller or mid-sized cities just don't have a lot of the other big industries that big cities would have. You know, if you look at their number of college towns that also double as state capitals, right? So you think of those places,
sure.
they're going to have lots of folks that work for the government that will it can sort of serve as a nice balance to the reliance on colleges. Now, over time, having these universities in these towns has been a tremendous positive, in a sense that you think of all the big economic cycles that that have occurred over the decades, or even the sort of broader secular trends of reduction of, say, manufacturing. If you've had a big college town, you've been somewhat insulated from all of that. And so this what they're going through now is in some respects unprecedented for them. This is,
right.
They're not used to having to think about wild swings in revenue, say for local businesses, or and then as a result, the tax revenue coming
right.
in locally, because students show up, every fall, and yes, they go home for a little while, but they're back, at some point, and it's predictable in a way that other other industries are not, and so. Yes, I think for smaller communities, I focused on Virginia Tech. Again, this was largely rural community in Western Virginia, and Blacksburg itself is not the population is around 45,000. So they wouldn't have some of the other big industries that Tucson might, and so that is they're feeling this probably much bigger way, in a sense that you can walk around there and you can visually see, see there's a difference, right? There have been fewer people in that community than there has been in a long time.
Right. When you research or talk to these universities, is there a sense that there will be some normalcy once students can come back? I mean, I know here in Tucson, our University of Arizona intends to return students. We'll probably see a drop in international students, which is a massive income generator. But is there a sense in these cities you've researched or talked to that there's optimism about the next few months? Or is there a concern that getting back to normal, so to speak, is going to be years in the making?
I think people are pretty overall optimistic, and that it couldn't be as dead as it has been in the spring. you know, there are a lot of these places, you know, it seems as though many universities have chosen June as the month where they'll state publicly their plans for the fall. So everyone is sort of looking toward those announcements. But I think, you know, many colleges have indicated to some degree that, well, we will have some in-person classes, and so you should plan for that. So I think there's reason for optimism. But there are a lot of unknowns, right? We don't know what enrollment will look like yet, as far as how many students, mm-hmm. particularly those that are coming from other parts of the state or, mm-hmm. or coming from other states, or as you pointed out, internationally, how many of them decide to come back,
right.
And when they decide to come back, and how each university schedules in class or in person classes versus what's remains
right.
online and how they do that. Those things are still unexplored fully. So I think overall people are hopeful. You know, I mentioned football games. That's a big deal in a lot of places, and as far as I can tell, that hasn't been fully decided yet either. And so
true.
They're for hotels and restaurants and places. Those events draw not only the students but many, many others to their communities. And so they're hopeful that things will go on as planned. But they are, you know, I don't think they feel like they're ready to believe that is 100%.
Sure. We're speaking this morning with Justin Baer, the senior special writer for the Wall Street Journal, and he wrote an article recently about how large colleges and universities in small and mid-sized cities really help to boost the economy, and in any other kind of recession, actually be a steadying force. But when they are forced to close, what happens? Justin, thank you so much. I there's so much more I'd love to ask you, but if I ask you any other question, we're going to have to cut you off. I don't want to do that. So thank you so much for giving us a call. From
sure,
the Wall Street
thank you.
Journal, and talking about this article, and as you're processing through how communities are trying to respond and mitigate these challenges, let me know. We'd love to continue this conversation if relevant. So thanks for calling in today. I appreciate it.
Sure, anytime.
Tucson, Wall Street Journal calling in here on Tipping Point, and I think for a community that's even large like Tucson, we are so driven by the university. We can't just depend on that or our government employment as we have to steady this economy. It's going to have to be something more. And I think Justin pointed to that. When we come back from bottom of the hour news and commercial breaks, we're going to talk with Devin Underwood of The Talent Store, our continuation of the series Workforce Pivots, helping so many of you listening who are employers and own companies think about how to bring your workforce back when and as you feel comfortable. It's detailed, it's nuanced. We help you figure it out every Friday here. That's what we're up to next. We'll be right back, Tucson.
CBS News at the top and bottom
okay.
of every
Thanks,
hour. 10:30 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a variety of both state and federal emergency funds set up to help individuals and businesses survive COVID-19. To make sure you have the best opportunity to access these resources and apply for business loans and more, you're encouraged to get your taxes in and to do it with the help of a tax professional. Give Shanae and her team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes a call at 520-838-0856 to get started. Tell her you heard it on Tipping Point for 50% off.
Why love where I live.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to whyloveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going.
It's Eye on the Ball with a new voice in sports talk here on 1030 The Voice.
That's right. My old pal Jay Gonzalez is joining the show to bring some great storytelling every weekday from 6 to 7 p.m. Jay, I know you'll also bring some great guests with your history in sports here in Tucson.
I think so, Steve. I'm a Tucson native. I played sports here. I've been part of the sports scene all my life. I feel like I know what Tucson wants to talk about. We're going to have fun. I'm not sure you'll agree with me every day.
If nothing else, it'll make for a good sports talk. Be sure to tune into Eye on the Ball weekdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here on 1030 The Voice.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson, good morning to you. Welcome back here for our second half of Tipping Point. Every morning, 9 to 10, Monday to Friday, your drive time, in-depth news, talk, and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We just finished talking with Wall Street journalist Justin Baer about his article on how college towns and college-driven towns, and I would argue like ours in a very big way here in Tucson, are being affected by COVID-19 and what that looks like moving ahead here into the future. Excited for our next installment here of Workforce Pivots. Devin Underwood, principal and founder of The Talent Store, walks us through how, especially as employers and managers and team leaders, listening that we work through what it looks like as the economy slowly reopens. How do we bring our workforce back? How do we pivot our needs? We talk about it and all about it every Friday here in the third segment, Workforce Pivots. Devin Underwood, it's good to see you again. How are you? Happy Friday.
Hey, Zach, how's it going?
Good. Good. So we were talking this week about the governor's announcement yesterday regarding schools, and we're not going to get into the policy side of or anything of that, just the indication that we can talk about how do our employers, you know, and how do our team leaders manage their current teams and how all that looks like internal to our organizations. But the whole other side of this question, Devin, is what is happening at home? How do our employers and how do our team leaders help employees who have families at home who need a lot of these other support services to work? How do we help them transition back into the workforce well? That's our conversation today. What are some of the things that you're helping employers and team leaders work through on that score?
Yes, that's another, I think one of the biggest pieces of the pressure puzzle during quarantine was kids being home. So it wasn't just that now my home has become my workplace, and it wasn't just that we had to navigate new technology and try to stay connected and collaborative remotely, but also at the same time, my kids are here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand why they don't have my attention, and potentially they need my support and assistance in learning because they were taking classes from home. So that's a whole nother level of challenge that's really new for nearly everybody. I think that, you know, the word unprecedented has been way overused, but I keep reflecting on the fact that this crisis has kind of lit up different topic areas we probably have been discussing for quite a while. And so one of those pieces of the puzzle is supporting parents and allowing them, maybe there's some flexibility in work hours. Maybe there is some assistance in care or help with care of their kids. Lots of different pieces to that puzzle. And even before COVID was really a part of a discussion about how to increase diversity in the workplace, particularly with women, but really with single parenthood. A lot of that just already was getting in the way of people leaning in and accepting positions and joining companies. So even more so, this is going to be more complex. And I imagine part of the governor's call for schools to go back in is this economic piece of the puzzle.
I would agree. Mm-hmm. I would agree. And you know, I think you hit on it, but Devin, I would imagine a lot of companies, and this would probably be the right thing to do in many cases, will say, hey, look, we need you in the office for some face-to-face communication, but we'd love to have you work from home half the week, right? To say that is probably a good thing. But if you have a 3 or 4-year-old at home, you know, or whatever the case may be, even through the summer, there's a whole complexity to that that we're going to have to think through as a society.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we likely don't have summer camps this year.
Correct.
We likely don't have daycare. So it is. It's a whole new summer for everybody. And now even the homeschooling is not happening.
Right.
That kept them busy for a little while. Now, of course, 3 and 4, that doesn't help with that, but. You know, I can remember growing up, I was sent to my grandparents in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ability for grandparents or next generation to care for kids right now is compromised because of their vulnerability. So there's all kinds of safety nets around child care that have just kind of disappeared that we need to rethink and figure out. And that's a big problem. In the meantime, how do you value your employees' time, productivity, and energy? And where can you flex based on position type and need, deliverable and work need? Where can you flex and give to help accommodate?
Right. You know, Devin Underwood, one of the reasons we've been really excited to make this a consistent series here as we transition back into the workforce here is that as the principal of the Talent Store, you work with companies large and small on helping to answer some of these questions. And I'm just wondering if you have any real life examples, either in your work directly or that you've seen around the country that you'll now be encouraging your clients to think about implementing to solve this challenge that we're talking about this morning. What are some best practices for our employers listening to be thinking about in managing the stuff at home that really employers never had to think about, but now they do for their employees?
Yeah. Yeah. This is really hard stuff. I think that I don't have a silver bullet right now, Zach, and I wish I did.
Oh, come on, Devin. I'm just kidding.
I think everybody's figuring it out. But number one, it starts with dialogue and conversation. So you have to first introspect and look at what is needed here to keep our company not just moving forward or surviving, but thriving. So really looking at how does our business thrive? Because if the business is thriving, you then have the resources to support your workforce and grow it, which is good for everybody. So what do you need really done? And then how can we create some creative problem solving around that? And how do we manage conversations with your employees in a legal and comfortable way to learn what they need? And then really start to create some plans around that. But it has to be open and it has to be a communication process, and then some creative thinking. And I do believe there are solutions, but we've really got to sit down and look at the full problem and get creative.
Right. You know, Devin, you hinted at this a little bit earlier in the segment, but I mean, over the past 10 years, maybe even 15 years, we've had all these philosophical conversations about the changing nature of the workplace, right? Work from home, is it possible? You know, you had the Yahoo CEO At one point, it was Marissa Meyer, I think her name is, sent all of her staff home. And it was like, well, that was a pendulum swing in the other direction. Now we got to bring everybody back. There's been innovations mm-hmm. around childcare at the workplace. I mean, what is interesting to me is that all this stuff was kind of innovation and experimentation. Now it's necessity, right? We've been pushed into a moment where now this is real life. This isn't just, you know, I want to try something different, change the world. I mean, the world has changed. Welcome to the new reality. Here we go. Do you think we're going to see more childcare at the workplace? We're going to see more flexible scheduling. Are you going to see all this experimentation of the past 10 years now become best practices moving forward?
I think we have to. And again, you know, I look at, so this is real life for everybody now, but this was real life for single mothers. So if you really look at female representation in leadership or wanting to diversify in terms of gender, many, many people were saying you have to look at supportive childcare or flex schedule in order to do that. That is the thing, one of the things that the workplace can influence and control that's keeping women away from the table. And so, you know, that's been real life for some of our population for a while. And increasingly now everybody's experiencing it. In workplace childcare is, you know, something I was really leaning on with even somebody who's looking at a new co-working space and thinking, how do we get a space that is female friendly? And, you know, we talked about those things, but even now, I don't know what childcare looks like with COVID. And so that's why I say there's not yet that silver bullet, because now we have to solve for then social distancing and safe care. So there's just so much to unwind and talk about. In that area. But I think if we talk and we really think and we have good intentions around it, there are solutions we will discover. So we've just got to get talking about it and get moving through it.
Devin, the part B of this that I'm excited about is that I think you raise really good questions. You don't have the overarching universal silver bullet to solve it, but you do have the tools to sit down one-on-one with employers, with workplaces, with team leaders to figure out what is the right solution for them. As we're bumping up against our break here, where's the best place that our employers and team leaders listening can give you a call to reach out and tap into the advice you can provide on a one-on-one basis to answer all these questions we've asked here?
Yep, definitely go to yourtalentstore.com. You can put a time directly on my schedule, on my calendar, and we can talk live, free consultations. We've also got a really cool subscription program that makes a lot of sense right now for small businesses. We've lowered it to a 90-day contract versus an annual subscription so that you can leverage our resources really inexpensively to get some of this ideation, documentation, and program process policy stuff going so you can pivot and bring people back to getting to work.
Amazing.
Safely.
Amazing. Devin Underwood, thanks for your service to the community. Thanks for doing this series with us. We're not even done by far, but every Friday, third segment, we get you on to help us ask the hard questions about what the new normal looks like. And that already is a weird term. But Devin, thank you so much. Have a great weekend and really appreciate the gap that you're filling here in our Tucson community.
Thanks, Zach. And this was the toughest one yet. The school piece. So
yes.
I'll have better answers and more examples as we work through it, I promise.
I love it. We're working through it together. Devin, thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
When we come back from our last break, Janelle Briggs and Ryan Egan will be on to share an update about their revolutionary housing startup, Stackhouse. We'll be right back. I'm excited about this one. We're going to break some news today. Stay tuned. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Local and national politics, the issues that matter to you. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going.
If you like sitting around the porch or dinner table sharing stories with friends, that's what we like to do here at Our American Stories. I'm Lee Habib, and each weeknight we bring to you stories about American love, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreamers and marriages, and even the stories of music and acting legends. I invite you to sit around the porch with us as we share Our American Stories.
Evenings from 7 to 9 on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk, 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson. Welcome back here as we close in on the weekend. Hope you have a good one planned. We have Janelle Briggs and Ryan Egan on the line, partners in Stackhouse. Innovative, affordable housing startup right here in Tucson. Janelle and Ryan, I have two basic questions I want to ask you. Number one is, what is Stackhouse and why is it so important? And number two, you're going to break some news with us today, I think, on the air. And what is that? So let's start with Janelle on that first question. Tell us about Stackhouse and why it is so innovative.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having us again. We are so thrilled to be spending some time with you this morning. Stackhouse is a real estate development company, and our goal is to bring container homes to downtown cities across the country and eventually around the world. We're building the first ever vertical container community right here in Tucson. We purchased property on Stone Avenue just south of Speedway last summer, and we are raising funds to start construction later this year.
Amazing. What makes this affordable, and why is it so important for urban cores and urban exurbs right now?
Yeah. So what sets Stackhouse apart is that we're a hybrid model between ownership and renting. And so what we are able to do is provide container homes that start at $45,000. So the same price as an SUV, you can design a custom container home. Then if you want to live downtown, you can dock that home in our vertical stackhouse community and pay a monthly rent that covers all of your utilities, cable, internet, and parking. So we provide a home at an affordable price point and a place to dock that home in a great neighborhood.
Amazing. And that's been the key, right? Is, you know, if we're going to have, you know, we know that a lot of our innovation centers are in urban areas. We know that urban land can often be really expensive, which makes housing expensive, which makes it harder for workers to work where they need to work. I mean, the whole domino effect starts to happen in a surprising way when we think about the geography of work. You've cracked that code in a really special way. I believe you have an exciting announcement today to share. Is that true?
It is true. I am just, you should see my face. I'm grinning like a fool.
I can hear it. And I hear Ryan actually grinning. So that's a good thing.
So we started Stackhouse in 2017, and last night we launched an equity crowdfunding campaign on WeFunder.com. What WeFunder allows us to do is reach out to the community and have you invest in our business so that when we're successful, you are successful. So like Kickstarter, where you can support a company by pre-ordering their product, WeFunder allows anyone to invest in a company for as little as $100. And so we are raising $500,000 on WeFunder. This money will release construction funds already lined up, but banks require that we have an equity stake. Ryan and I are millennials. We've never made a whole lot of money like most millennials, and so fundraising has been a challenge. And WeFunder allows us to go to the people who believe in us and say, hey, support us. When we're successful, we'll pay you back. And so that's what we're doing.
Right. I have made a fool of myself doing math on the air, but I'm going to go out on a limb and do it again. That means you need 5,000 investors at that minimum. Obviously, people can invest way above that. But if you can get 5,000, am I doing my math right? Here we go again.
Yes, you are.
I knew Ryan would check my math. I've had horrible luck with this on the air. It's on record. You can hear my bad math on past shows. But 5,000 investors at that minimum gets you to goal. Obviously, the higher level of investment, the less of that. And people listening can invest. And with WeFunder, right, it's not a donation. This is an investment where people can get some interest, correct? How does that work?
Absolutely. So WeFunder essentially allows for fractional investment. So if you invest $100, you'll have a fraction of a percent of ownership in Stackhouse. And our projections show that we'll be able to pay out a dividend. All of this information is available on WeFunder.com. If people want to go to our website, which is stackhouse.life, they can sign up for our newsletter where they'll get all of this information. We'll also be hosting a webinar in the near future where people can join us to ask questions about Stackhouse, ask questions about our business. So stackhouse.life is the best place to go to get all of the details.
And I'm looking at a countdown right now. Is there a public launch of this? As in people can sign up now to get information and then down the road in a couple days they can start investing? Or what does that process look like?
So it's actually both. WeFunder allows you to launch in kind of a stealth mode so that you can get the support of your community, your friends, and your family. And so if people are interested, we will send them the link right away and they can invest. That helps us get momentum so that when we are publicly launched in 2 weeks, we have that community support behind us. We've made progress towards that $500,000 raise, and then we can make a splash to the general public.
And I just wanted to add, it also allows us to reward our early supporters, so our friends and family, and we would consider all Tucsonans at this point our friends.
Absolutely.
It allows them to benefit from early perks that are available to our earlier investors. And so we wanted to make sure that those were available to people who have been with us all along the way before we opened up nationwide.
Got it. Man, this is incredible. And I want people to go to your website and check you guys out, because I don't think people realize how groundbreaking this is, and how innovative of a solution this is to a global problem, and one that has really hit home in Arizona in some big ways. You know, Janelle and Ryan, I am kind of on an advisory panel for young professionals for the Center of the Future of Arizona. They surveyed young professionals across the state. A top item is housing affordability. This is a big deal. We are unfortunately counting down to the final seconds. Let's do those websites one more time. Janelle, where can people, what's the first point of contact one more time for people to contact you, and if they want to be a first supporter?
Please go to stackhouse.life. You can sign up for our newsletter, get all of the info there. I also want to give a quick shout out to the Community Investment Corporation for partnering with WeFunder to help Tucson businesses be successful on this platform and really get the community involved in supporting all small businesses.
I second that. Janelle and Ryan, I don't want to pull teeth as hard next time to get you on the air. Let's do this again soon, okay?
Cannot wait. We're looking forward to it. Thank you, Zach.
Love you guys. Thanks for doing this in Tucson. Appreciate you and what you're bringing to Tucson and the global community. I think this is going to go big. So best of luck. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. Let's back the stack. Bye-bye.
Back the stack. Ryan Egan and Janelle Briggs of Stackhouse, $500,000 is the goal. A new innovative way to invest in big ideas that matter. And that's what Tipping Point's about, is the ideas shaping Tucson's future. That does it for us. Hugh Hewitt coming up, Bill Buckmaster at noon. We'll see you same time, same place on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend, Tucson. Take care.